103.2 Dublin City FM, this is Mental Wealth with Brian Green. If you want to get in touch with the programme, you can email us at mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie. On today's programme, I've travelled to Navan, just a little bit outside Dublin, and I'm talking with Marie Johnson of So Sad in Navan. Hi, Marie.
Hi, Brian. Lovely meeting you.
Tell us about So Sad. It's come up on my radar a good few times, and you're doing great things in the Northeast.
So Sad originally started off, the first office opened in August 2008 in Drogheda, and this was started by the Moroni family, Peter and his wife, Valerie, and his two sons, Lee and Wayne. And that was a result of tragically, they lost their son Simon to suicide. And they had found that there was no counselling, there was just no support there for people. So that's where it started. And then it developed from there. I lost my son in September 2008, and I went, I suppose, on a quest to try and find out something. I felt all along that people needed somebody just to listen to them and maybe guide them. I didn't know much more than that. And then basically, there was very, very little at the time, and somebody had told me about So Sad, and I contacted them. And I started with a computer and an emergency phone in the January 2009. Then we went on and we opened the house here in August 2009, just before my son's first anniversary. And then from that, the offices in Dundalk, Cavan, Carrick, McGross and Tullamore came about.
So you're in six centres now, serving a lot of people, and it's run by volunteers.
That's right. We have volunteer staff that run our office. I mean, in this office alone, you'd be talking about anything, something like 90 people a week receiving counselling. And all our counsellors give their time free. So it's a big operation to keep it all going. And, you know, so we have people here manning the office all day. We do assessments on people. That's usually the first thing that happens. The person comes in for an assessment so we can assess their risk level and whether they need to go to hospital or GP, or whether counselling is the road they go down, or a combination of all these things.
All the counsellors that volunteer for So Sad, are they kind of also working in private practice, in hospitals and in education?
Some of them are. Some would have jobs that have nothing to do with counselling. Some of them work in schools, some of them hospitals, but right across the board. And a lot of them have gone back to college, paid a lot of money to go to be trained as counsellors. And I think people don't realise not only are they giving their time up, but they also have to pay for supervision. And they also have to pay for insurance that costs them money for the transport to get here. And it's a lot of commitment. And we wouldn't be able to do it without these people.
The good news is that suicide is falling in numbers. But the problem is that the numbers were way too high to begin with. If you were to even compare them to road traffic deaths, that suicide is underreported as well. So while it's great that the numbers are coming down, is your workload fluctuating or changing with that? Is it increasing as you grow your number of offices? Or, you know, what are you feeling since the recession has moved a little bit away from that kind of deep recession that we were in?
Interestingly enough, just last year happened to look, got a copy of the statistics for Meath. And the year that my son died was 2008. And I was actually quite shocked to realise how high the numbers were in that particular year was the highest year. And I know that was kind of the start of everything to do with the Celtic Tiger and it all falling apart. But I was still surprised because I've thought about that. Why? It seems now that there's more and more suicides than there were in 2008. But I think the reason was in 2008, you didn't hear why people died and you didn't hear they were dying of suicide. I think the difference is now, yes, the numbers have gone down, but you hear now that that's how the person died. So it actually feels like we know if you talk to the man on the street, they think the suicide numbers are going up and up. They're still far, far too high. But I think somewhere somebody has to stand up here and, for God's sake, do something about mental health. because it's across the board. The numbers that are rising here with me in the past 4 or 5 months are the under 18s, particularly under 16s, and I'm scared. I really, really am. I mean, we've heard things on the news lately about young people taking their lives. And when they go, there's no emergency help. There are services there, but where do you go on that point? You know, so we need to get our act together here. It's ridiculous.
Save Our Sons and Daughters. And that's where So Sad comes from. Absolutely brilliant name. You do intervention. When is the optimum time, the best time to seek intervention? And I'm thinking maybe it's a parent who has a child who might be in trouble in that scenario. When is best to intervene?
When you first start notice changes. For young people, it's a strange time becoming a teenager. They want to spend more time with their families, with their friends, I beg your pardon. So when you start noticing, it's hard to get a balance sometimes between...
Can I just ask you though, what are those signs that they should be noticing? Because obviously there's puberty and there's teenagers acting up and whatever. What are the signs that you would then say needs intervention?
Isolation. Young people that are, I know they do this anyway, but I'm talking about cutting themselves off from their friends, sitting in the room constantly on their own. And some of this is sounds like normal teenager stuff.
Well, it is nowadays with Netflix and Wi-Fi.
It does make it. It's like everything. Get to know your child. Get to know their friends. That's a big, big part of it. If they stop hanging out with their friends, they stop going to whatever sports they were involved in. If you notice any signs of self-harm, keep an eye on the things. Get interest in your child's life. It can often be the time, I think, as parents where we start to lose communication with our children. We sometimes can be terrible where we can set the rules down, but we can forget to actually listen. And that goes for the teenager too. Finding notes, finding them giving away stuff, things belong to themselves, or talking about death. Sometimes if we've just had a bereavement within the family, that can play some part in how people feel. And some of that goes back to the whole thing of what we say at funerals, and we'll say now so-and-so is happy, now they're with whoever. You know, best example, my father died and we said, oh, Harry's grand now, he's with Maureen, my mother, he's happy now. My father wasn't unhappy before he died. But if you can see how, if you're not feeling in a great headspace, building their confidence, self-esteem, watch out for self-esteem and stuff. And just being there for them. That's really, really important. Being open. Never be afraid to ask. If you think or even suspect, never be afraid to ask your child straight out, have you thought of hurting yourself? Have you ever self-harmed? I think a lot of parents are frightened that if they use the word suicide or self-harm, that for some reason we're going to put that idea into their head. That's not the case. It's like me saying to you now, I'm going to take a knife and I'm going to cut your hand. Is that okay? You're not going to want to do it, you know. So it's just keeping an eye, watching the isolation, watching what they've given up in their life, being as much a part of your children's lives, keeping an eye on what's going on, the friends, all that type of thing. If you're not sure, ring somebody for advice.
That was what I was going to ask you, and you just said it at the very end, is that most parents are watching these things, but then they don't maybe connect the dots. Yeah. And then if in doubt, maybe make that contact and ask a professional and ask an organisation like your own about these things, just to be sure. Like if you thought that the tiles are blown off your roof and you get advice from a builder, should people... I think they do watch, they do see these signs. Should they make that connection then and get advice?
Certainly. I mean, I think that's the biggest problem with parents is the fear. And forearmed is forewarned, like, you know what I mean? Educating yourself. Don't become obsessive about it either. I mean, there is that whole thing of teenagers going through certain stuff anyway. And it can be a difficult time for you and for them. And it can be hard to deal with. So if you're unsure, talk to somebody, ask them for guidance. Because every single person's unique. So it's very hard to give something very, very broad that applies to everybody. So what I would say is, if you're unsure, talk to somebody. And not be afraid, like ring the likes of us, So Sad. I'm sure you can ring the helpline in Piota House, and ring them just to find out information so you know how to handle it. And most times everything will be fine. You know, watch out for bullying and stuff like that. These are the things. Bullying plays a massive part in how our children develop. And often schools are not great at sorting it out, even though they try hard, but it often doesn't work. So ring for advice, ask somebody else.
You mentioned self-harm. Is it kind of an early warning sign in some ways, or is it just a subsection of the suicide and that it needs to be dealt with differently?
Okay. Self-harm is not suicide. Okay. A lot of people think when they find their son or daughter or anybody has self-harmed, they think it was a suicide attempt. It's not. For a lot of young people, it can be a case that they need... Some people can't deal with emotion, so they need to feel some kind of physical thing. For people, when they cut, I don't want to upset your listeners by being too graphic or anything, but seeing blood and stuff like that can actually...
That's their release, is it?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Some people, when I've asked them, like, what is it? And they just feel that, you know, they feel the pain, they have the release. Sometimes it's also the physical thing of the blood and this sort of thing, and it is the pain. But if you were to ask that same person, for instance, like as I said earlier, to stick a pin in their finger when they weren't feeling like that, they wouldn't want you to do it.
But while it's not suicide, it still needs to be addressed.
Yeah. The risk of self-harm is that over a period of time comes less effective. So then they have to do more dangerous things to get the same result. And often what happens there is, as it escalates, suicide can be one of the things that ends up coming on board. They can end up suicidal because they can't find another way to deal with these issues.
On a day-to-day basis, So Sad, well, you mentioned numbers earlier, like, was it like 90 people a week?
Yeah, approximately 90 people a week here.
Yeah. And that's lots of volunteers assisting those 90 people. Do you have a kind of a funnel, a conveyor belt, a supply chain of volunteers? Because it sounds like you have lots, but you always need more.
Yes, particularly our counsellors. At the moment, I'm actually looking for people, qualified counsellors, that maybe have an hour a week to give of their time, or 2 hours would be even better, or people looking to do their accreditation, which means they have done their degree and they to be accredited, they need to do so many hours. So I'm actually, and all our offices are always looking for qualified counsellors. And it can be difficult. We go through changes at different times of the year where college starts and we have a move on. I've had a big move at the moment with people that are accredited or qualified counsellors that have, I've lost about 5 or 6 at the moment in the past couple of months, that are moving on to new things. And they've been with us a good many years, and that can be difficult because, yeah, you depend on them. There are, you know, when people are really at risk and things like this.
Well, here's an opportunity. It's halfway through the programme. I'm talking with Marie Johnston of So Sad in Navan. We're on air in Dublin, and there's no So Sad office in Dublin, but there might be people who are going through a phase of their education or are available as a counsellor. Who should they get in touch with?
They can ring any of the offices. They can ring us here at the Navan office. Will you be able to give out maybe details of the phone numbers and stuff?
Yeah,
like
you,
that?
If you've got a number, shout it out now. We'll shout it out at the end as well.
Okay. The Navan number, you can ring us on 046-9077-682. Or you can ring them, if you wanted to ring the main office, which is Drogheda office, it's 041-9848-754.
That's if you or anybody you know might be interested in taking up some counselling hours with So Sad. They're always looking for volunteers. What else do you do on a day-to-day basis? Do you go out to schools and GAA clubs and stuff like that?
Yes, we give various talks. The hardest thing about the talks, I suppose, is that you're trying to cover such a vast area. So if we've been somewhere more than once, we try to do something different the next time. Schools... Parents mainly. A lot of it is, as I said, we see young people. I'm going to school now tomorrow, and it's more about the business end of it. But I was with them there before Christmas, and what we did was, instead of me standing on the top of the class, we had kind of more an interaction where we sat in a circle kind of thing, and it made the young people more comfortable, so they were more inclined to ask questions, and we dealt with as many things as we could relevant to the young person and tried to keep it on their level. And I find those interactions are very, very good, because you have small numbers, they've a chance of picking up. I mean, there's so many areas to cover. For young persons, for instance, we would maybe cover technology, relationships, about self-harm, what to do if you're worried about somebody. We go through a whole range of things, and about exams even, and about not being defined about if you go to your leaving cert and you end up you don't get the 500 and odd points that you need for a course. That's not the end of the world. And I often wish I could put the old head on the young shoulders to let them realise that sometimes the things that we think are negative at a time, when we look back in years to come, realise actually that did me a favour, you know. And sometimes I share things that I did as a teenager. I know it seems like it was years and years ago, but it lets them know that we all make mistakes and not beating ourselves up. One of the things with young people in particular is low self-esteem and confidence. So, you know, and it's back to what I keep saying to people, give yourself a break, give yourself a credit for what you do well. You know, we spend so much time beating ourselves up. And even the same with adults. One of the biggest problems we come across, relationships breaking up for men in particular. And we have the two sides of the coin. We hear all the time, and you know, about abuse, women suffer and all the rest. And we don't talk near the man side of things. And that's very, very hard. That was a big wake-up call for me. And the amount of men that maybe are not involved in their children's lives, and they are trying to come to terms with this. We're lucky that we have a men too here based in Avon, so that can be a help as well. So it's across the board, and trying to give enough information for people in case they need it in an emergency, because nobody ever knows when something's going to happen. I hope it never comes to your door, but...
Just going back to that call for volunteers, I forgot to mention that the old ad from the 80s on the radio used to say Navan only an hour from Dublin. Well, it's now only about 45 minutes from Dublin with the N2 and the M3. So there you go, if you wanted to do some volunteering. It's all free counselling that you provide in the telephone service as well. There's no invoicing, there's no bills. How is that funded? Are you getting big checks from the state and the HSE?
I wish. No, it's basically by people doing fundraisers for us. Like, we have to pay for this building we're in now. We have to pay our rent here every month. It costs a fortune on heating. We try to have a nice space for people to come in, because that's important, that they will feel comfortable. And you don't want somebody coming in a freezing cold room to sit down and talk to somebody. So you'd be surprised, even to our bins and stuff. So any of those sort of things, you can imagine paper, printing, all stuff across the board that a normal office would have as well to run your ink and your computer and all that. So only for the fundraisers out there, I don't know what we would do. And we have people that help us on a continuous basis, and without them, you know, we wouldn't be here. We'd be lost without them, and I can never ever thank them enough.
What are the sort of things, like, have you got a fundraising department who help people do things, or is it all up to people doing it themselves? What kind of things are happening out there that people are fundraising with?
Most of the times it's just people within the community that will run an event, and the money is donated, so sad. We have certain things like the Mark Quinn Tractor Run is run every year. And that's out in the Castletown area. And we have Brian Kelly and Slane that runs various events during the year. But a lot of the time it's just people out there that decide they would like to do something to raise money for us. We have one or two new people starting that are going to do some fundraising. It's very, very hard to get a group of people together to do the fundraising. I try my best, but I just haven't got the time to do everything. if I had more time, I could spend being through more backpacks and things like that. People often worry too that, oh, I laugh when someone says, oh, well, I only made €100. Only, that's massive. Not only have you raised money, which is €100 more than we would have had that day, but the awareness you raise is priceless. And I do think within our communities, that's where we can make a difference. We never know that during that fundraiser that somebody has picked up a card or it's put it in the back of the seed is sown there, that I do know there's some place to go. So thank you to all you guys that do all the fundraising. We really appreciate it.
I got to know about yourselves through people who do fundraising for you up in Dundalk. And I'm guessing that you've built up a service over the last 10 years and it has a reputation, a very strong brand and reputation. People know that you're a service to go to for people who have mental health issues and are, you know, coming across issues of suicide thoughts and self-harm. And on the back of that reputation, people step forward and say, I'm doing a fundraiser, I'm going to do it for SOSAD.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we've worked so hard. I mean, it's. I don't think people realise the amount of hours it can take that you can put in. There'll be weeks there where I will do work 60 hours a week. I've seen weeks where I work 7 days a week. As a result, my family suffer. My relations must think I've gone to live in a foreign country.
Earlier in the interview, you were telling people that they should take a break and step back from things.
Practice what you preach. I suppose for me, the greatest thing of all is the joy that I get from it. I have certain people that call in to me and I try to make myself available to people. I hate to turn anyone away. Absolutely hate. Even if we're not the right, if I cannot just be a support till they get their, you know, the listening ear for them. And it is important. I think if I didn't enjoy what I did so much. My New Year's resolution, though, is to try and have it maybe an odd Saturday and Sunday free so that my family can get to know I'm still around.
A New Year's resolution is something thinking into the future and near future. And that's very good because we're midway through January. I'm going to give you a magic wand. Okay. No, let's take it. Exactly. There's the wand. Now, the future of SOSAD. Well, this isn't about plans that you might have, but where would you want to see this? It's 10 years on the go now. Where would you like to see this in 5 years' time?
Well, I suppose at the end of the day to have, you know, I think we need our premises. I mean, sometimes we just don't have enough rooms no matter where we go. So maybe, yes, the premises that is maybe purpose-built for our needs. I've always, when my own son, when I went to his doctor and stuff and all the places I did before he died, in my head as a mother then, I just wanted him to be in a safe place. And I had this vision in my head that if I had a safe room and I could get people to come to him, if I could just keep him safe, everything would be fine. I think it would be nice to be able to employ a few people to, but that's very hard to expect people to go and volunteer to fundraise. And it can be difficult because most people here are, you know, they mightn't even have husbands working, they might be working themselves and they're trying to, and even to pay for their petrol to come in, it all costs money, even out for them to go out. So I may maybe having a, I don't actually know on that end how you work it out, because I think we will always need volunteers. I just wish that people would stop falling through the gaps. I wish that things would link up a little bit better. That people, when they go for help, that there is somebody there. And I know this is going beyond the point that you've asked me, is I just want SOSAD to continue. I want us to do the best that we can. But we need outside change for these things to happen. Nobody should have to wait around. If you need to see somebody you're suffering with mental health or you're suicidal or whatever, you shouldn't have to wait weeks or days to see somebody. You should be able to, you know, and it can be very hard sometimes when people are left waiting in a waiting room for hours and hours and hours, and then you have the moment of flus, but that whole mental health approach has to change.
Can I have my magic wand back?
No.
Okay. There's another piece of radio magic is that if I say somebody's name and they happen to work for a big company or the government, they have media monitoring. So if I say their name, it comes up as an alert. So if I say Minister for Mental Health, Jim Daly, it's now going to come up on an alert because I've said his name on the radio. So now that I've said his name on the radio and he's listening in text because he's been given a report as to what's been said, have you any messages for the Minister for Mental Health?
Yes, I do. I know that there's so many problems out there, but I think we're going to have to start putting money like we did. We've made a difference on the roads. There are still problems there, but we desperately need to sort our mental health across the board. I mean, it's not just affecting one section of our community. It's right, the amount of young people that are coming is unreal, and that's scary. I've been frightened in the last few months. We need, and we could spend years doing these reviews and everything, and I think in the psychiatric departments themselves, they're overwhelmed with the amount of work they have to do. It has to become a priority. We have to stop putting everything aside and look at there a couple of years ago, money taken out to be supposedly for mental health and this stuff. It's crazy. Nobody knows that. I don't know if I'm going to end up with mental health tomorrow. Nobody knows it's going to knock on our door. It doesn't discriminate. So you can be the minister. You can be the man that sweeps the streets. And it doesn't make any difference. But until we start making mental health a priority and taking the fear out, people are so frightened now. They feel the amount of people that have gone to have for help and they just don't get it. We need to get our act together. You need to put things in motion now. The figures need to drop. That's it across the board. Nobody, and I mean nobody, not my worst enemy, should have to go through losing their son like I did, because you never get over that. So governments need to get their act together and make changes, make it priority now.
I think I've just warmed you up. We might have to do another interview in the future. Marie Johnson of SOSAD in Navan, many thanks for the chat today. Just could you finish, maybe give your website so that people can contact you?
I just want to say, first of all, a massive thank you for allowing me do this. It's great to be able to. I hope maybe some of the things I've helped people, but I appeal to people, if you need help, please tell somebody. Particularly your men out there, one of the things that I've noticed is that you're too embarrassed, too, you know, ashamed. Please don't die because you were feeling ashamed or embarrassed to tell somebody that you need some help. Give ourselves a ring. Ring the likes of Pieta House. Ring the Samaritans. There are people there to listen and help, but please don't struggle on your own. Now, the question that you're asked.
The website.
The website, www.sosadireland.ie.
Thank you very much. And if anybody does need to ring somebody, maybe down in Dublin or around the country or listening to the podcast, Samaritans are always on 116 123 103.2 Dublin City FM. This is Mental Wealth. We're back next Tuesday at 12:30. If you want to get in touch with the programme, mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie is the email to type to. And until next Tuesday, do take care, stay safe. Bye bye.